Good morning, everyone. We are four of us from the Gyudo Monastery. We brought us here by the grateful dead. We are the part of the grateful dead members. 30 years ago, we came here. At that time, none of us spoke any English. Now I can say little things. Thank you. And we were here 1980s, 85, and 88. And I was here personally in 1988. I didn't know what we were doing at that time. We didn't even know the Grateful Dead members, what they were asking us to do. But because of their, with their help, we are here today. And it's sad to see and sad to know that Bob Weir's gone. But we are here today to do short prayers. And I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Thank you. And of course, this is going to be in Tibetan. You pray from your own ways, okay? And we need lots of prayers this time of the this time. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Good afternoon. Thank you all for coming out here. I'd like to introduce the mayor of San Francisco, Daniel Laurie.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It is with great honor and deep gratitude that I stand before you today as we celebrate the life of an icon for San Francisco and for the world. Bob Weir. To the Weir family, Natasha, Monet, Chloe, thank you for sharing Bob with all of us. During this difficult time, please know that everyone here stands with you and that this city holds Bob, your family, close to our hearts. Bob Weir was a legend. His life and music touched millions upon millions of people. His presence on stage and the Deadheads who followed the band from city to city, it made us feel like we knew him personally, as though we were part of something bigger than ourselves, and that is more true today than ever before. Dead & Company's return to Golden Gate Park last August was a homecoming for the band and for a city that helped shape its city and its soul. Now, before the band took stage on day two, I had an unbelievable opportunity to meet Bob backstage to share a brief moment with him. So I introduce myself, and he starts saying to me, "Thank you for having us." And I was like, "What? No. Thank you for having us." I couldn't believe it. Even as he was preparing to give his time, his music, and his heart back to our city, Bob was still profoundly grateful. That moment has stayed with me. A small exchange with a legend who never lost his humility. San Francisco and the Grateful Dead are inseparable. This is a city where they performed more than 320 concerts across more than 24 venues. And I know many of you were at most of those. From the small neighborhood halls to the iconic stages, their music grew alongside our city. At 710 Ashbury, their home became a gathering place, hosting legendary dinners, rehearsals, friendships, and a creative energy that spilled out onto our streets. Free concerts in Golden Gate Park, music offered without barriers, people coming together for connection. That's how it started, with love, unity, peace, and incredible music. And this past summer, 60 years later, thanks to the people here, it came full circle. Thousands upon tens and tens of thousands of people across generations in Golden Gate Park sharing joy. Thank you, Mickey. Thank you, Bob, and the band for all that you brought and continue to bring. Bob Weir's story will always, always, always be connected to San Francisco, the city where his music took shape and where he always returns as he does today. He gave us music that reminded us that we belong to one another, and that gift will endure long after the final note ends. Thank you, Bob.
Hey, Bob, just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for being a wonderful spirit and creating a community that will live forever and music that will live forever. You're incredibly special and the world will miss you, but we'll always listen to you and we'll always have your vibe. Thank you.
Hey, Bob, what you left on this earth is so much more than music, so much more than a performance. You created a community of people that shared happiness and joy together, and I'm just super blessed and super thankful to have been part of it. For the short time that I did, you welcomed me and my friends in, and I'm forever thankful, and I know that you're watching over us and your family, and rest easy, man. We love you.
100 years from now, and musicians are still playing Jack Straw, trucking, and more, people will still be singing the praises of Bob Weir. Weir, the first and maybe only guitarist to use McCoy Tyner-esque chordal harmony, meaning chords and fourths, in a rock band. Weir, who wrote at least two songs featuring some of the most creative usages of odd time signatures in the popular song context. Weir, who with his band brothers created music that became and remains the hymns of many a devotee's life. We send you the fondest of fare thee wells and much love to the family. Natasha, Chloe, and Monet, all love to you.
Hello, friends and compatriots of the Bobby Weir universe. I'm here to celebrate the life of someone who truly made an imprint on every single one of us. For the trailblazers and the followers and the believers and the deceivers and all the wizards and warlocks and all the mayhem makers out there, you and I both know he was a little bit of all those things and so much more. And so now I'm sitting here in my library in my home in Topanga thinking about him and watching my son on his flight simulator. So we figured that we'd give a nice send off and give our best and our farewell. So what do we say, Sagan?
Fly, Bobby, fly.
Lots of love to you all.
Hey, Bobby, it's David Lemieux, your archivist. And this is a video I never thought I'd be making, but just want you to know how much we all miss you, and we're really going to take great care of your music. I don't think a day has gone by in the last 41 years or so, 42 years, that I haven't listened to your music, that I haven't listened to you sing and play guitar, and hopefully another 41, 42 years at least, where I'll be listening to the Grateful Dead every single day. And everything else you've done, but you certainly left behind some incredible music, and I just want to thank you for all the amazing music that I'll continue to listen to, and all the great adventures I had because of you. Really, I saw big chunks of the world thanks to you. So anyhow, we will continue to take really good care of your music and get it into as many ears as possible. The more people that hear your music, I think the better the world will be. So thanks for everything, and we'll see you around, man.
Hello there, all you fine, fabulous, furry, freaky folk of San Francisco. It's spectacular that you've come out to celebrate an amazing human being, a legendary musician, fellow that we know as Bob Weir. Lur.
Yes.
How many times did you see Bob?
I'm pretty sure, but the Grateful Dead, maybe 80, 100 times. Various other things around town. You can't miss going to see Bob play. I saw the Wolf Brothers, and it's amazing to sit there and just watch him play guitar. Hopefully everyone knows he's an amazing guitar player. He plays crazy stuff that no one else plays. And he wears cool shorts.
Cool shorts.
I wore cutoff shorts when I was a teenager because of Bob Weir.
I wore cutoff shorts because of Daisy Duke.
They're very similar.
Very similar thing.
Yeah. From behind, you can't tell the difference.
So which are more evocative, the short shorts of Bob Weir or the short shorts of Daisy Duke? Now that's, you know, it's a rhetorical question.
In my book,
but it is a question.
Bob Weir wins all contests and questions.
Okay. What else you got? What else you got, Lur?
You know, Bob was, I've never met anybody that like lived for playing music that much, you know? Like, I feel like there's nothing that guy wanted to do more than that. Well, maybe ride bikes. I also, when I was a kid, I was impressed by the fact that he had cool mountain bikes too. There's a lot to look up to in Bob.
Yes, Bob. He was a spectacular fellow. The thing that strikes me, I mean, there's many things that strike me, but A, he was just a great guy. Always up for adventure, always giving and friendly and good man. Lots of good tales to tell, sense of humor. But I find it incredibly inspirational seeing Bob go till 78 and touring the whole way through all these shows. It's very inspirational for us fellows that are out there trying to do what we do.
Indeed.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
I got to sing to Robert before he died, and I'll always be really grateful for that opportunity. Natasha, thank you for embracing me. And into your family, Chloe and Monet, thank you for loving me too. You've changed this country girl's life. And Robert and I doing Ramble on Rose together is a dream come true for this hillbilly. So thank you all for embracing me the way you do. And whatever I can do to celebrate the life of Robert Weir, please let me know, because I'm just a call away.
Would you please provide a warm welcome for the one and only Joan Baez?
Thank you, and hello. Wow. I'm not surprised, but there you all are. And I'm so glad people are addressing Bob in the first person, because it feels comfortable to do that, because the sense that he's here is stronger than the sense that he's gone. So a couple of things. I was lucky enough to know Bob just a little. And two special things. He's the only other person who danced barefoot on a stage with me during a concert. He was part of a group that really created a beloved community for people who needed it at that point. It was really loving and caring, family, sharing, really astounding. I didn't get it at that point. I was a mom, right? I thought, well, you can go, but don't smoke any of that dope. It's been a long journey for me learning that, you know? Anyway, even my own kid, who I was not that present for, found a family with you, Bob, and your people. Thank you. That probably is all of you as well. So, just to send you on your way, although you're probably there already, they say, or I've heard, that once they get there, they don't give a shit what's going on down here. They really are not interested. Anyway, maybe is interested in watching and sees the love coming from here. So to you, Bob, it's all freedom, all freedom, all freedom over me, oh. And before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. There's no more sound checks. There's no more sound checks. No more sound checks over you. And before you be a slave, you are buried in your grave and go home to your Lord and be free, and go home to your Lord and be free. Hallelujah. Bye-bye.
Okay, now would you please welcome Nancy Pelosi to our stage?
Hello, everyone. As joyous it is to see everyone here, I know we come here with a heavy heart, but also with gratitude. Gratitude for the life of Bobby Weir, so fully lived, so generously shared, that even in grief, the music keeps playing. Bobby Weir was not just a musician, a magician too. He was a force of nature. He was a force of nature, restless, searching, curious, and kind. He helped create a sound that became a language, a culture, and became a sense of community. You all know that. A sound that invited people not merely to listen, but to belong. And so we were welcomed by the mayor to San Francisco, which just loves Bobby Weir. Don't we love Bobby Weir? Many are here from all over the state, and I bring national message to all of you. Bobby understood something. He was so very remarkable. He understood something essential about America, that our strength and our improvisation, our diversity and our willingness to learn from one another, even when the tune changed. It was for more than a half a century. Bobby stood on stages large and small, offering not just perfection, but presence. You all know that. He showed us that music, like democracy, is not fixed. It is something we make together, night after night, note after note, voice after voice. He trusted the audience. You know that. He trusted the moment, and he trusted that if people came together with open hearts, something beautiful would emerge. And here we are. For those of you who love the debt, and here we are, wasn't it wonderful to see all the honors and respect that they received in the last year and a half or so? But of course, in Las Vegas, that was such a remarkable show, but at the Sphere. But wasn't it great that he got the last Kennedy Center honors? When they were truly Kennedy Center honors. We saw him there in his cape, and then he was so excited to be singing with John Mayer at Music Hairs, and that was a big honor for him just a few weeks after the Kennedy Center honors. And then, of course, the Polo Fields and Golden Gate Park. How many of you were there? That was the last time we were able to speak to him personally during one of the breaks. I was always trying to tell him to wear socks. It's cold out, but he never accepted that. But all you saw see all of you here and all the reception he received every place. It was a far cry from becoming what they called the other one. The other one, in deference to Jerry Garcia. He was the other one. He accepted that title. In fact, he wrote about it. He named his foundation about it and all the rest. And so again, the Grateful Dead has lived on and on and on. And I know one of our dear friends whom we love, Bob, Mickey Hart, is here today. Mickey and Bobby go all the way back to high school. And Paul and I, my daughter Christina was here, we've been to concerts over and over, year in and year out. I mean, 70s, 80s, 90s, blah, 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 blah. And night after night, year after year, there he was. Bobby would always be the same. When Bobby sang, He meant not as, that was not just a performance. It was a promise. It was a promise. People always ask me, what is your favorite Grateful Dead song? What is your favorite song? Do you get that asked question at any time? Shout out your favorite song. My favorite Dead song was whatever Bobby Weir was singing at that moment. And I could listen to him singing Standing on the Moon forever. Yeah. So he got this royal welcome in San Francisco when he came home. When he came home. Well, home was California for him, but San Francisco, where so much of the Dead started. And it was like San Francisco, because San Francisco is a place that is inventive, rebellious. The spirit of this place is so hopeful and free. California has always been a laboratory of ideas and dreams, and Bobby was one of the great dreamers. Proof that creativity and conscience can walk hand in hand. He believed in that the stewardship of the earth, of community, of one another. Long before it was fashionable, he understood that we did not inherit the world from our ancestors. We borrowed it from the future of our children. And he used his platform, his life, to remind us of that responsibility. But before all the legend, all the history, and all the music that will live forever, as he has said and said, what I remember most about Bob was his humanity, his warmth, his humor, his generosity of spirit. He had a way of making people feel seen, whether you're in the first row, or whether you're backstage, or whether you're all the way in the back dancing at the concerts under the stars. Bob never pretended to have all the answers. Instead, he invited us to question. He invited us to wander and to wonder and to keep on listening. And perhaps that is his greatest gift to us, the reminder that life is not about arriving at some final chord, but about staying present as the song unfolds. To Bob's family, Natasha, Monet, and Chloe, thank you for sharing him with the world, because the world is a better place because of Bobby Weir. Now, Natasha, Monet, and Chloe, please know that millions of people, many of whom you will never know, will never meet, are holding you close, praying for you with gratitude and love. To his bandmates and collaborators, thank you for the music, for the risk, for the joy, and for the fellowship. All of you helped create something that time cannot erase. Now, that last show that we had, not the Polyfields, but in July 2023, we were at the stadium. Some of you were there, the stadium there. And Bobby gave me the sign and he said, go out there and show this sign. I said, you know what, Bobby? I'm not going to be doing that. You're going to be doing that. And he did. But he gave me the sign and I'll show it today. Because I said, Bobby really loved democracy. He loved our country. And you know what he wanted everybody to do? Vote. You recognize yourself. It's a Grateful Dead vote sign. I was too shy to do it that day, but in his honor, I will take his order and show it to you today. But let me just say to Bobby, thank you. Thank you for your courage to be different, for your faith in people, for the long, strange trip that became a home to so many. As we know, listening to you, Bobby, the music will never stop, the love will not fade, and the light you brought into this world will continue to guide us, like a familiar melody we carry with us wherever we go. May you rest in peace, dear Bob, and may we honor your life by listening to each other a little more closely, to the music, to one another, and to the moment we are blessed to share. God bless you, Bobby Weir. Thank you all for being here.
Background, but I wanted to send a message, condolences to your loved ones, Bobby, but I also wanted to just say thank you to you. It was a shock, to say the least, because you were kept your private life so private, so none of us expected to lose you. But I think also you were so youthful, and so even though you weren't maybe measured in years, you weren't a young man, but you always behaved with some joyful wonder, and it was infectious to be around you. And thank you for always being so generous and kind to me. Thank you for leaving us with so much, with such a treasure of music and of experiences. I just am really grateful that you, that I had time to witness you on the world. And I'm grateful for the grace that you showed us, and the generosity that you showed us, and the beauty that you gave to us, and the memories that you'll give to us. And I will treasure all of my time with you and witnessing you, dear friend. Wherever you're going, Bobby, I'm sure they're gonna be happy to have you.
Bobby, wherever you are, up there in the universe, flying around, your beautiful spirit. We're all here today to tell you how much we love you. And the first time I saw you play, I was 16 years old. And I had the blessing of playing together with you the last night that you ever performed, the last set that you ever performed. There are no words that can describe to you what that means to me, how much I love you, how much I love everything you brought, your music, and how much I learned from you. So keep going out there. I hope your vibrations are spreading all over the universe, and thank you.
Bobby Weir was one of my very dearest friends, maybe my dearest. We had some good times, and I miss you, Bobby. Much love for now. We all miss you. The world misses you. Love you, Bobby Weir. Thanks for everything.
Hey, everybody. I wish I could be there. I think it's great that everybody's gathering to pay respects to our dear friend. I think about the first time I met Bob, the first time we played together at Wetlands in New York. From that moment forward, we forged a friendship and a kinship, and I love playing music with him and consider it an honor to have spent all the time on stage and together that we did. Thinking about one particular story in San Francisco when I did the Jerry Garcia Symphonic Celebration Tour with the Symphony, did two nights with the San Francisco Orchestra, and one of the nights was Jerry's birthday, and Bob came out and joined me for both of those nights along with our friend Jeff Comenti. And it's not that we were loud, because we weren't, but apparently some of the string players were annoyed with the volume level and walked off stage. And I still remember Bob saying, fuck 'em. And I'll never forget.
We loved Bob so much, and we miss him, and we want to send all our love to the Weir family. We're here for you.
Yeah, just know that you have someone out there thinking about you and loves you, and we miss old Bob.
Hi, this is Bill Kreutzmann, and I would like to share with you some of my thoughts about Bobby.
Time has proven that nobody will ever be able to replace Jerry Garcia or Phil Lesh, and time will prove the same for Bob Weir. Jerry Garcia had already been playing music with Bob Weir in a jug band when he called me up to form a rock band with them. That's how I first met Bob. We played our first real show at a pizza parlor in Menlo Park, and if I remember correctly, long story short, it was pretty good pizza. We added Phil Lesh and became the Grateful Dead. As everyone here can attest, there was a magic to the Grateful Dead that was greater than the sum of our parts. But we had some pretty great parts. Bob was sometimes overlooked because he was standing next to Jerry. After all, he was the other one.
But time and time again, Bob proved to be just as invaluable and just as irreplaceable.
In the end, what more was there for him to do? He played it all, and never the same way twice. I think he had finally said everything he had to say, and now he's on to the next thing. I just hope he was able to bring his guitar with him, or otherwise he'll go crazy. Sleep in the stars, my brother, and get there safely.
Oh, Frank.
Love you forever, Billy.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
Bobby and I were born on the same day, exactly 30 years apart. Libras. While the astrology checks out, 3 decades is a pretty wide chasm between any two people, whether they share a birthday or not. In the 30 years that preceded me, Bob had become a countercultural icon. I was a child of the 1980s. I come from a world of structural thinking, the concept, the theorizing, the reassessing, the perfecting. Bob learned early on that spirit, heart, soul, curiosity, and fearlessness was the path to glory. We both found success with each of our templates, and then we found each other. The echoes of the music Bobby and the Grateful Dead made would lead me to him through whatever strange and nervy knack I have for sidling up next to the things I'm in awe of. What would follow would become the adventure of a lifetime for me. It's hard to find the words to describe the relationship Bob and I had. We never really went looking for them. We didn't need to. We stood side by side together in the music. That's where those 30 years would melt away, and that Libra balance would kick in, and we'd become comrades, sometimes brothers, even if only by one shared parent. We were unlikely partners, and that was part of our magic. Over the course of a decade, we came to trust each other. He taught me, among many other things, to trust in the moment, and I'd like to think I taught him a little bit to rely on a plan. Not as a substitute for the divine moments, but as a way to lure them in a little closer. I guess maybe what I was really doing was showing him he could rely on me. Bob took a chance on me. He staked his entire reputation on my joining a band with him. He gave me musical community. He gave me this community. I got to know his incredible family, Natasha, Monet, and Chloe, whom I now consider my dear friends for life. He lent me his songbook. He invited me into the worlds he'd constructed, and he taught me what the songs meant and what it meant to perform them. And in return, I gave him everything I had, night after night, year after year. The honor of getting the opportunity to express my heart and soul and take flight over those magical compositions has never been lost on me. It's also never been lost on me that there is very little difference between myself and anyone else who loves this music. In so many ways, our experiences have been the same. So I'd like to say a few words to deadheads everywhere. The excitement you felt when you were boarding a plane or packing up the car to travel miles to see the shows was the same excitement I felt about flying to the next city, working out the set list in a group chat, meeting up with the band on stage for sound check, and getting ready for that magical moment when we take the stage and discover whatever was in store for us that night. When tours would end, you would come home, dump out on your couch, and sleep for 2 days straight. I would do the same, and I could feel the connection we shared together. All of us tired and weary, our hearts so full of music and memories, waiting on the next bit of chatter that it could all happen again. When we played multiple nights in the same city, the afternoons in between felt as if we were suspended in a dream, waiting to become reanimated as soon as the first note of the next show would play. You might have gone to work, and your colleagues wouldn't understand why you were only half there. It's because the other half of you was still at the venue, ready to become whole again by the music. And I felt the same. The hours before the next show existed only to bring the next show closer to us all. And to the countless musicians who have shared a stage with Bobby, I share in this sadness with you. To have played behind him is to know how the songs go. We will forever share stories of what we learned from studying under a master, and we will go on to teach others how he saw this music, how to leave room to hang a note, how to embody the main character of each song, giving the music everything those characters require for their stories to come to life. And after all we'd shared together, something new has arisen. A sadness so hard to put into words and nowhere near being fully realized. We've only begun to make sense of what's gone missing. And in the end, Bobby was right again. Because all we can do is hold on to this moment, and I don't have the faintest idea of a plan. I know right now it's easy to feel as if time is speeding up and taking so much from us all, but I would remind you, as I have tried to remind myself this past week, of just how many nights we all lived so fully in each second, hanging on to every word of Bobby's, following the music around twists and turns, through forests and over majestic vistas, taking in the magnificent interviews and wondering how we all got so lucky to have been found by this music and invited into this dream together. Bob had mentioned that Jerry had never really left him, that he still felt him up on his shoulder. And now Bob will be forever perched over my shoulder. I expect to see him in my dreams for many nights to come, when we'll take that stage together with the rest of the band and weave notes around one another, and I will wake up with a smile, remembering the beauty of it all. There are a lot of Grateful Dead lyrics that give comfort at a time like this, but the line I find myself thinking about the most is from a Leon Russell song called A Song for You. And I'd like to think I can hear Bobby saying these words to us all this afternoon. But now I'm so much better, so if my words don't come together, listen to the melody, because my love is in there hiding. And so we will all keep listening, together. 300 years, Bobby. Now that's a plan I can get behind. So here's something I know would make Bobby go. Blah. Thank you, Maestro. You changed my life. I will love you forever. Thank you.
Hey, aloha. Just wanted to send out a message of love for Bob's family and friends, and I think you're going to be feeling the reverb from the love that he put out into the world for a really long time to come, not just through his music, but also just the kind person he was. I got to experience that firsthand last year. My family and friends took me out on my 50th birthday to the Sphere to see the Dead & Company, and got to spend some time with Bob and his family before the show, which made it even more of a special night. And I know for all of us, we're gonna just hold on to those memories forever. And so, in Bob's honor, let's just all try to go out there and put as much love into the world as we can every day. Take care, aloha.
Rob Wasserman introduced me to Bobby in the early 90s. The three of us went out to breakfast in Pasadena, California, where they were playing a duo show. About 25 years later, after Rob had passed, Bobby called me out of nowhere, and he said that Wasserman had come to him in a dream the night before and told him that the reason he introduced us was that I was supposed to take his place in Bobby's band when he was gone, and that the band was to be called Wolf Brothers. Bobby said, so you want to come up here and jam with me and Jay? And I said, of course, man. Tell me 6 songs to learn, and I'll drive up to Marin. He gave me a list of songs, and I locked myself in a hotel room for a week and played them over and over and over till they were burned into my soul. And I showed up at TRI, plugged in, and of course, he didn't call any of the 6 songs that I'd practiced. We just jammed on an A minor chord for about 20 minutes, and then he took out his phone, called his managers, and said, all right, book a Wolf Brothers tour. Now, my minimal hope was that over time, I would get a master class in fearlessness from an improvisational king, and that I could take what I learned playing music with Bobby and apply it to every aspect of my life. In just that first half hour, I got an incredible lesson about trusting your dreams, trusting your instincts, and mainly jumping in without hesitation for the joy and the sport of it. I've never met anyone like him. Even then, he was kind of half man, half spirit. And now I guess he's got both feet in the spirit world. But I know that his soul is as present as it ever was, living on in his music and in our hearts. We're going to miss him like crazy, but just remember, he's right here if you need him.
Hi, I'm Mark Pincus, president of Rhino Records, the Grateful Dead's longtime record company. The Grateful Dead and Bobby Weir have been the soundtrack of my life since the early 80s. I've had the very good fortune and honor of working with Bobby and the other members of the Grateful Dead over these last 15 years. And it's been a career highlight and a personal highlight. Working with Bobby, getting to know Bobby, Natasha, Monet, Chloe, it's just been terrific. On a personal level, my family loves them. We love them. I love them. Bobby, you're going to live on forever. Your music and you. May the four winds blow you safely home.
Hey now, Sammy Hagar here. Like y'all, I really don't know what to say. Love Bob, all that, and I think the easiest thing to do is I put this little, as Bob would say, a little walk in the woods of some really beautiful moments I personally had, and a lot of us shared with Bob because some of you were there. Anyway, this should bring some love and joy to this event. That's about all I can think about doing right now. Check it out.
Oh, Mary.
sunshine will light up to my dreams. Oh yeah, I can still smell your rose petal wings. Angel, come see me tonight in my dreams.
So there you have it. Bye-bye, my friend. I'll see you when you see me.
Thank you. Well, I'll say this. Bob would have loved this. This is so soulful. All the people who cared for him during his life, they're here. Natasha's family, our band, just everyone, and you. All the people who loved him. Now, only a few months ago, just a few miles from where we stand today, Bob and I played our last shows together. As we stood on that stage in Golden Gate Park, 6 days in the rear view, I looked to the right at my old friend, and for a moment, I saw him transformed. Gone was the bushy gray beard, the whiskers, the wisdom, and the age. Instead, like the grains of time turning on themselves, I saw a young Bob again. There he was, a cross-eyed, barefoot young folk singer with the wind blowing through his long brown hair. A teenager again, the boy wonder. We called him Bob Weir. Yeah, he was the boy wonder. The Grateful Dead was a ritual band. I felt it the first time I heard Bob play. As I walked into that Straight Theater on Haight Street, September 29th, 1967. That night, the theater was dark, dark enough for the band to disappear into only sound. It was consuming. It permeated every pore in my body. I felt the vibrations creep up my spine, and suddenly I was whole. I was home. Bob was just 19 that first night. At the Straight Theater, his long fingers making chords few others could physically reach or was even possible. His choices, like the way he navigated through life, were his own. What defines those early years, though, was the laughter. Bob was funny, and he loved funny. Bob was the band clown, a very endearing comic relief from the tedium of the road. Always depend on Bob to have a squirt gun or a noisemaker or something going on in airports to attract attention and challenge the rules. Now, we all love breaking the rules. But Bob, he was really good at doing it in public. No doubt, sometimes we could get a little carried away, no doubt. One day, we wake up. Bob announced that we were going to the zoo to record the animals. No, it was a full moon, which was very important to Bob. He assured me. That's when the animals are at their loudest, he said. I thought it was a great idea. But the problem with the plan was that we didn't have a gear, and neither of us were recordists. Owsley, we thought, might loan us his Nagra recorder. So we showed up at Owsley's and taught us how to record. Then at midnight, we arrived at the zoo. But as we climbed the gate, we got entangled in the mic lines. We hung there from the wires on the inside of the fence and laughed so hard that the guards came, shining their lights, grabbing us down. Now, not knowing what to do with us, they let us go. As we left, we paused for a moment and looked back in the rearview mirror, stopping to consider what the recording might have been. But we found the zoo was totally silent, not a sound. That was perfect, Bob. Yeah, there was nothing like Bob Weir, you know. He was singular. He was not a copy of anything that came before. He was a true original. I could sit here and tell you so many stories about our lives together. But at the heart of it all is that this was never just the band. It was a family. Now, we grew up together. We lived together. Raised our kids alongside each other. Together, we rode horses across my ranch in Novato, all the way to the Great Pyramids. We traveled down 1,000 roads, roomed with each other in every blue light cheap hotel, and stood beside each other from New Orleans Parish Prison to the doors of the Oval Office. As he grew older, Bobby fully embodied the role of troubadour, but also became an incredible family man. The bus became home to Bob, Natasha, and the girls. And it always made me happy when I saw that bus coming down the road, mainly because Bob was pretty much late all the time. He was charmingly late, let's put it that way. Bob liked to talk about where the music would be in 300 years. Now, after watching it all build for 60 years, he could envision the depth of our impact hundreds of years down the line. Now, he had that kind of vision. He saw the music in all its different forms and genres. He could hear the songs played symphonically. He could hear them plucked by bluegrass players, hear them woven through a second line, or echoed through the Grand Ole Opry. He knew the songs would have a life of their own, not just because of who wrote them and where they came from, but because of where he felt future generations might take them. Not because of us, but because of all of you. For the Grateful Dead, the music was a necessity, and the connection to a community was its power base. Where that's most tangible is in the encore. When the stage goes quiet, and the crowd takes over the song, singing in the absence of a voice from a microphone. It's there, with all of us bathing in the collective refrain, and you can really feel the power of the music, of the community it came from, and ultimately, the community that it inspired. The songs of our lives are yours now, and it's up to all of us to keep the refrain building. Love is real, not fade away. I need some help up here. You got it. Hold it. Feels good, don't it? Thank you so much for all the years. Words do not describe my feeling for you, people. If it was not for you, there would be no us. Be sure of that. Hold it tight. See you around.
So it is beyond an honor to me and all of us up here to welcome the Weir family to this stage.
My dad's oldest daughter. Thank you all so much for being here today. I know it means a lot to my dad. A lot of you know my dad first and foremost as a musician, and rightfully so. Music was his number one priority in life and one of the things that brought him the most joy. But I wanted to talk a little bit about him on a more personal level and what I saw in him as a person and a father. If there was one word I could use to describe him, it would be unique. He was an adventurer and constant student of life, always looking to make an impact. He and I were both the more introverted members of our family. Comfortable in silence, he was the type of person who would only speak when he truly meant what he was saying, and every word he said carried great weight and meaning. He was so intelligent, he loved learning. Born dyslexic, like everything else, he never let it stop him and still became an avid reader. He didn't graduate high school as his music career took off, but you would never know that. He knew everything and had the prose of a distinguished writer all from his own teaching. You could ask him any question about any subject, his favorites being history, science, the arts, health, and politics, and he could give you a Wikipedia-level response with complete accuracy. He was always keeping up to date on the latest news, technology, and research findings in between his music and workout time. With all his knowledge came strong and well-informed opinions. He was a natural-born activist, an avid advocate for the environment, animals, and human rights. From playing From playing benefits to speaking out to just how he moved around on a daily basis. For example, there was a period of time where he insisted on our family using reusable bamboo paper towels, which by the 17th wash became little more than a moldy ball of lint. He was very upset when we eventually threw them away against his best wishes. He was always trying to make a positive impact and live by his principles. He was a good person who cared a lot about the world and the beings in it. I want to mention something that I think speaks a lot to his character and is important in these times of discourse. He was a proud Democrat his whole life. However, yeah. However, anytime we were speaking about politics, he would always refer to the other party as our friends, the Repubs, every single time. He felt strongly that even when people disagree, they should want to try to work together to build a better humanity. While his death was sudden and unexpected, one thing he felt strongly about that can ring true now more than ever is that the show must go on. He was staunchly attached to that saying. Playing music through his best and worst times. His sense of purpose with the music was so incredibly acute, I've never witnessed anything like it. His most important wish in the world, above anything, was that the music and the legacy of the dead continue into perpetuity. He often said that American music in general is something that can bring us all together in these divided times. He worked so hard and so passionately, listening to records and rehearsing his music tirelessly in his free time, even before and after his gigs on show days. So please, help him continue the legacy. Keep listening to the music, going to shows, bring your friends, kids, or grandkids, make someone a tape or a Spotify playlist, give someone a miracle, make a tie-dye, sell a grilled cheese. You get it. We all know what keeps this movement alive. His work here on Earth was always going to feel unfinished because the fans and the community are the ingredients needed to finish it with him. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chloe. Bobby and Natasha's other daughter.
The youngest.
Thank you for your presence today and for listening. I'd like to start with something obvious. My father devoted his existence to music. Many people will say this in a variety of ways, but I want you to know what this looked like from the eyes of a daughter. Around 12 in the morning, after playing a 4-hour-long show, he'd get right back to it. The minute we were back at the house or hotel, his guitar was back in his hands. Experimenting, improvising, learning, loving. He called it woodshedding, and there was not a day that went by where he did not pick up his guitar. At any given hour of the day, the ever-evolving tone of his guitar would fill our home. In mornings before sun had risen, in lazy afternoons, in cozy evenings, he would play. If he woke in the night and couldn't sleep, he would find his guitar. He was the busiest person I've ever known, yet he would always make time for his family. I don't know how I got so lucky to be born into a life where he was my father. The dedication behind the scenes spoke for itself in his live performances. But the phenomena that is a live dead show must be credited as much to the fans as to the band. My dad explained this to me in his own words. We have a kind of special relationship with our fans. What happens is they give us energy. We kind of focus it, we shape it, and give it back to them. All this happens right up there. What I'll call the azimuth. It's between us and the audience, and the music happens there. They're as much a part of it as we are. That explains why we never got around to making great records, because they weren't there in the studio with us. As often in conversations with my father, I had to look up the definition of a word he just used. I found that in navigation, Azimuth is used to describe your bearing as relative to your destination and true north. In astronomy, it traces the space between the horizon and a celestial object, as seen from the observer. To my father, azimuth is between the band and audience, and it is where music finds life. He knew the songs are inseparable from the dedicated community of Deadheads. My gratitude for this community, in which I have grown up, is unending. Without this community, there would be no music and no me. Within my father's devotion to music, he carried the spirit of not only those who came before, but all those who will come after. His greatest wish was always for the music to live on long after he was gone. In 30 years, I hope that a 60-year-old is bragging to a 20-year-old in a parking lot saying, "I saw them with Bobby." In 300 years, when the music from this time period is being discussed, I want the Grateful Dead to not only be in that conversation, but to be still evolving. This 300-year legacy is an aspiration my dad often spoke of. He explained, for that to be possible, it matters how we carry on now. It is a legacy far larger than solely sound, and he believed if we played our cards right, these past 60 years would mark only the beginning. Speaking for myself, everybody here, and all those here in spirit, earthly or otherwise, it is a promise I know we can keep. We'll do it for us, and we'll do it for him. Thank you.
I wrote this to him. I thought it would be easier. Okay, thank you all for coming. Okay, darling, our great maestro, I imagine we feel how you felt when Jerry left. But you didn't stop. You kept going. Oh, I don't know if I can get through this without crying, but anyway. Okay, my kids did it, so this is embarrassing. All right, you kept going, you kept playing, you kept creating, you kept sparking joy, and you kept sharing it. You kept listening to your muse. You kept loving, as you would say, left foot, right foot. Okay. Oh. I'm a terrible public speaker, and he's probably okay. Anyway, what I wanted to say to you, darling, was thank you, teacher. We will try our best. You had two sides. You had your quiet, meditative, spiritual guru side and your fierce lion force of nature on the stage presence that everyone here knows so well. To honor you, we will touch on both. I'd like to do 108 seconds of a moment of silence. He liked that number, 108. And it is kind of pushing and it's kind of long, but he liked to push limits, so we're gonna go for it. We sometimes call these moment of silence, we called it taking a holy instant in the day, and it was a beautiful thing. So we'll do that together. And then after that's over, we're going to give that little Bobby bow that he does. I have to show you. So we'll do that at the end. That was a great bow he did. It was his own. And then after that, to honor his other side, we're going to yell and scream and applause louder than you have ever done before. And you have to do it really loud because he's hard of hearing. And he's given, or hun, you've given your whole life. You've given, always. And it's time for you to receive. Yeah, that's it. We're going to start the timer. So, 108 seconds of love to Bobby. Ready? Okay, ready? He'd always say, okay, go. Thank you. Hands up, everybody. A beautiful hawk that's been flying around. It's over there. Anyway, hey, darling. Okay, wait. Oh, I have to do one more thing. Okay, so last thing. Bobby was so generous with everything, and when friends of ours were near the end, he wouldn't hesitate. He would grab his guitar, his hat, his serapa, and he would head to their home to play by their bedside as they were dying or in their last week or whatever it was. If it was a video that we were sending because they were far, He would take 5, 6, 7 tries. He wanted it perfect. And it was a beautiful thing. And sometimes it would work in one take, which is a lot of pressure for us today because I would like us all to sing Ripple to Bobby. And we've got one try, so sing your best. John, where's John? Are you gonna? John's gonna lead us. And thank you. Get everybody, because what you don't see at the shows is how hard and dedicated, and we have the best crew on earth, the superhuman crew. So everybody come out, let's sing, bring the dog.
If my words did glow with a gold of sunshine, then my tunes would play on the harp on the strong. Would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold the thoughts I'm broken, perhaps they're bitter, left unsung, I don't know, don't really care. Let there be songs to fill the air. You need fire.